the hearth. Outside, the storm had returned. It blew in earnest, muffling the house in wind and wet. Penelope and Telegonus were only down the hall, but the shadows had gathered around us and they felt a world away. This time, I took the silver chair. The inlay was cool against my wrists. The cowhides slipped a little beneath me. "What do you want to hear?"
"Everything," he said.
"Whatever you know." I did not even consider telling him the versions I had told Telegonus, with their happy endings and non-fatal wounds. He was not my child. He was not a child at all, but a man full-grown who wanted his inheritance. I gave it. Murdered Palamedes and abandoned Philoctetes. Odysseus tricking Achilles out of hiding and bringing him to war. Odysseus creeping at moondark into the camp of King Rhesus, one of Troy's allies, and cutting the men's throats while they slept. How he had devised the horse and taken Troy and seen Astyanax shattered, then his savage journey home with its cannibals and piracy and monsters. The stories were even bloodier than I had remembered, and a few times I hesitated. But Telemachus took his blows straight on. He sat silent, his eyes never leaving mine. I saved the Cyclops for last, I cannot say why. Perhaps because I could remember Odysseus telling it so clearly. As I spoke, his words seemed to whisper beneath mine. They had landed exhausted on an island and spied a great cave, heaped with rich stores. Odysseus thought it might be good for plunder, or else they might beg hospitality from its inhabitants. They began feasting on the food within. The giant it belonged to, the one-eyed shepherd Polyphemus, returned with his flock and caught them at it. He rolled a great stone over the entrance to trap them, then seized one of the men and bit him in half. Man after man he gobbled down until he was so full he belched up pieces of limbs. Despite such horrors, Odysseus plied the monster with wine and friendly words. His name he gave as Utis. No one. When the creature fell at last into a stupor, he sharpened a great stake, heated it over the fire, and plunged it into his eye. The Cyclops roared and thrashed, but could not see to catch Odysseus and the rest of the crew. They were able to escape when he let his sheep out to graze, each man clinging to the underside of a woolly beast. The enraged monster called for help from his fellow One-Eyes, but they did not come, for he cried, "No one has blinded me. No one is escaping." Odysseus and his crew reached the ships, and when they were safely distant, Odysseus turned back to shout across the waves, "If you would know the man who tricked you, it is Odysseus, son of Laertes and prince of Ithaca." The words seemed to echo in the quiet air. Telemachus was silent, as if waiting for the sound to fade. At last he said, "It was a bad life." "There are many who are unhappier."
"No."
His vehemence startled me.
"I do not mean a bad life for him. I mean that he made life for others a misery. Why did his men go to that cave in the first place? Because he wanted more treasure. And Poseidon's wrath that everyone pitied him for, he brought it on himself. Because he could not bear to leave the Cyclops without taking credit for the trick."
His words were running forward like an undammed flood.
"All those years of pain and wandering, why? For a moment's pride. He would rather be cursed by the gods than be no one. If he had returned home after the war, the suitors would never have come. My mother's life would not have been blighted, my life. He talked so often of longing for us and home, but it was lies. When he was back on Ithaca, he was never content, always looking to the horizon. Once we were his again, he wanted something else. What is that if not a bad life? Luring others to you, then turning from them."
I opened my mouth to say it was not true. But how often had I lain beside him, aching because I knew he thought of Penelope? That had been my choice. Telemachus had no such luxury.
"There is one more story I should tell you," I said. "Before he returned to you, the gods demanded that your father journey to the underworld to speak to the prophet Tiresias. There he saw many of the souls he had known in life. Ajax, Agamemnon, and with them Achilles, once best of the Greeks, who chose an early death as payment for eternal fame. Your father spoke to the hero warmly, praising him and assuring him of his reputation among men. But Achilles reproached him. He said he regretted his proud life and wished he had lived more quietly and happily."
"So that is what I must hope for, then, that one day I will see my father in the underworld and he will be sorry?"
"It is better than some of us get," but I held my peace.
He had a right to his anger, and it was not my place to try to take it. Outside, the garden rustled faintly as the lions prowled through the leaves. The sky had cleared. After so long among clouds, the stars seemed very bright, hung in the darkness like lamps. If we listened, we would hear the faint twisting of their chains in the breeze.
Do you think it was true, what my father said, that the good ones never liked him?
I think it was the sort of thing your father liked to say, and truth had nothing to do with it. After all, your mother liked him.
His eyes found mine, and so did you.
I do not claim to be good.
You liked him, though, despite all of it.
There was a challenge in his voice. I found myself choosing my words carefully. I did not see the worst of him. Even at his best, he was not an easy man. But he was a friend to me in a time when I needed one.
It is strange to think of a goddess needing friends.
All creatures that are not mad need them.
I think he got the better bargain.
I did turn his men to pigs. He did not smile. He was like an arrow shooting to the end of its arc.
All these gods, all these mortals who aided him. Men talk of his wiles. His true talent was in how well he could take from others.
There are many who would be glad for such a gift, I said.
I am not one.
He set down his cup.
I will tax you no further, Lady Cersei. I am grateful for the truth of these stories. There are few who have taken such pains with me.
I did not answer him. Something had begun prickling at me, lifting the hairs on my neck.
Why are you here? I said.
He blinked.
I told you, we had to leave Ithaca.
Yes, I said. But why come here? He spoke slowly, like a man coming back from a dream.
I think it was my mother's idea.
Why?
A flush rose on his cheek. As I have said, she does not share confidences with me.
No one can guess what my mother is doing until it is done. He turned and passed into the hall's darkness. A moment later, I heard the soft sound of his door closing. The cold air seemed to rush through the cracks of the walls and pin me to my seat. I had been a fool. I should have held her over the cliff that first day and shaken the truth out of her. I remembered now how carefully she asked after my spell, the one that could stop gods, even Olympians. I did not go to her room, rip the door from its hinge. I burned at my window. The sill creaked under my fingers. There were hours till dawn, but hours were nothing to me. I watched the stars outside dim and the island emerge, blade by blade into the light. The air had changed again and the sky had veiled itself. Another storm. The cypress boughs hissed in the air. I heard them wake. My son first, then Penelope, and last Telemachus, who had gone to bed so late. One by one they came into the hall, and I felt them pause as they saw me at the window, like rabbits checking at the hawk's shadow. The table was bare. No breakfast laid. My son hurried to the kitchen to clatter plates. I liked feeling their silent glances at my back. My son urged them to eat, his words heavy with apology. I could imagine the speaking looks he was giving them. I'm sorry about my mother. Sometimes she's like this.
Telegonus, I said. The sty needs fixing and a storm comes. You will attend to it.
He cleared his throat.
I will, mother.
Your brother can help you. Another silence, while they exchanged their glances.
I do not mind, Telemachus said, mildly.
A few more sounds of plates and benches. At last the door closed behind them. I turned.
You take me for a fool, a dupe to be led by the nose, asking so sweetly about my spell. Tell me, which of the gods pursues you? Whose wrath have you brought upon my head?
She was seated at my loom. Her lap was full of raw black wool. On the floor beside her lay a spindle and an ivory distaff, tipped with silver.
My son does not know, she said.
He is not to blame.
That is obvious. I can spot the spider in her web.
She nodded. I confess that I have done what you say. I did it knowingly. I could claim that I thought because you are a goddess and a witch, that the trouble to you would not be much. But it would be a lie. I know more of the gods than that. Her calmness enraged me.
Is that all? I know what I have done and will brazen it out.
Last night your son talked of his father as one who takes from others and brings only misery. I wonder what he would say of you.
The blow landed. I saw the blankness she used to cover it over.
You think me some tame witch, but you were not listening to your husband's stories of me. 2 days you have stayed on my isle. How many meals have you eaten, Penelope? How many cups of my wine have you drunk?
She paled, a faint greying along her hairline, like the creeping edge of dawn.
Speak, or I will use my power.
I believe you have used it already. The words were hard and cool as stones. I brought danger to your isle, but you brought it to mine first.
My son came of his own accord.
I do not speak of your son, and I think you know it. I speak of the spear you sent, whose venom killed my husband. And there it was between us.
I grieve that he is dead.
So you have said.
If you are waiting for my apology, you will not get it. Even if I had such powers as could turn back the sun, I would not. If Odysseus had not died on the beach, I think my son would have. And there is nothing I would not trade for his life.
A look passed across her face. I might have called it rage if it were not pointed so inward. Well then, you have made your trade, and that is what you have. Your son lives, and we are here.
You see it as a sort of vengeance, then, bringing a god down on my head.
I see it as payment in kind. She would have made an archer, I thought, that cold-eyed precision.
You have no ground to make bargains, Lady Penelope. This is Aiaia.
Then let me not bargain. What would you prefer, begging? Of course, you are a goddess. She knelt at the foot of my loom and lifted her hands, lowering her eyes to the floor. Daughter of Helios, bright-eyed Circe, mistress of beasts and witch of Aiaia, grant me sanctuary on your dread isle, for I have no husband and no home, and nowhere else in the world is safe for me and my son. I will give you blood every year if you will hear me. Get up.
She did not move. The posture looked obscene on her.
My husband spoke warmly of you, more warmly, I confess, than I liked. He said of all the gods and monsters he had met, you were the only one he would wish to meet again.
I said, get up.
She rose.
You will tell me everything, and then I will decide.
We faced each other across the shadowed room. The air tasted of lightning. She said, you have been talking to my son. He will have implied that his father was lost in the war, that he came home changed, too soaked in death and grief to live as an ordinary man. The curse of soldiers. Is it so?
Something like that.
My son is better than I am, and better than his father too. Yet he does not see all things.
And you do?
I am from Sparta. We know about old soldiers there. The trembling hands, the startling from sleep. The man who spills his wine every time the trumpets blow. My husband's hands were steady as a blacksmith's. And when the trumpet sounded, he was first to the harbour, scanning the horizon. The war did not break him. It made him more himself. At Troy he found at last a scope to equal his abilities. Always a new scheme, a new plot, a new disaster to avert.
He tried to get out of the war.
Ah, that old story. The madness, the plough. That too was a plot. He had sworn an oath to the gods. He knew there was no getting out. He expected to be caught. Then the Greeks would laugh at his failure and think that all his tricks would be so easily seen through. I was frowning.
He gave no sign of that when he told me.
I'm sure he didn't. My husband lied with every breath, and that includes to you and to himself. He never did anything for a single purpose.
He said the same of you once. I meant it to wound her, but she only nodded.
We thought ourselves great minds of the world. When we were first married, we made 1,000 plans together of how we would turn everything we touched to our advantage. Then the war came. He said Agamemnon was the worst commander he had ever seen, but he thought he could use him to make a name for himself. And so he did. His contrivances defeated Troy and reshaped half the world. I contrived too. Which goats to breed with which, how to increase the harvest, where the fishermen could best cast their nets. Such were our pressing concerns on Ithaca.
You should have seen his face when he came home. He killed the suitors, but then what was left? Fish and goats. A graying wife who was no goddess and a son he could not understand. Her voice filled the air, sharp as crushed cypress. There were no war councils, no armies to conquer or command. What men there had once been were dead, since half were his crew and the other half my suitors. And every day there seemed to come some fresh report of distant glory. Menelaus had built a brand new golden palace. Diomedes had conquered a kingdom in Italy. Even Aeneas, that Trojan refugee, had founded a city. My husband sent to Orestes, Agamemnon's son, offering himself as a counselor. Orestes sent back that he had all the counselors he needed. And anyway, he would never want to disturb the rest of such a hero. He sent to more sons after that. Nestor's and Idomeneus's and others. But they all said the same. They did not want him. And do you know what I told myself? That he only needed time. That any moment he would remember the pleasures of modest home and hearth. The pleasures of my presence. We would plot together again. Her mouth twisted in self-mockery. But he did not want that life. He would go down to the beach and pace. I watched him from my window and remembered a story he'd told me once about a great serpent the men of the north believe in, which yearns to devour all the world. I remembered that story too. In the end, the serpent ate itself. And as he paced, he would talk to the air which gathered all around him, glowing bright as silver on his skin. Silver. Athena. Who else? She smiled, bitter and cold. Every time he would come, she came again, whispering in his ear, darting down from the clouds to fill him up with dreams of all the adventures he was missing. Athena, that restless goddess whose schemes spun on and on. She had fought to bring her hero home, to see him lifted among his people for her honor and his, to hear him tell the tales of his victories, of the deaths they had dealt to the Trojans together. But I remembered the greed in her eyes when she spoke of him, an owl with a quill in its claws. Her favorite could never be allowed to grow dull and domestic. He must live in action's eye, bright and polished, always striving and seeking, always delighting her with some new twist of cleverness, some brilliance he summoned out of the air. Outside, trees struggled in the dark sky. In that eerie light, the bones of Penelope's face showed fine as one of Daedalus's statues. I had wondered why she was not more jealous of me. I understood now. I was not the goddess who had taken her husband. "Gods pretend to be parents," I said. "But they are children, clapping their hands and shouting for more." "And now that her Odysseus is dead," she said, "where will she find more?" The final tiles were set in their place, and at last the picture showed whole. Gods never give up a treasure. She would come for the next best thing after Odysseus. She would come for his blood.
"Telemachus."
"Yes."
The tightness in my throat took me by surprise. "Does he know?"
"I do not think so. It is hard to say."
She still held the wool, matted and stinking in her hands. I was angry. I could feel it searing in my belly. She had put my son in danger. It was likely that Athena plotted vengeance against Telegonus already. This would add fuel to the fire. Yet, if I were honest, my rage was not so hot as it had been. Of all the gods she might have led to my door, this was the one I could bear best. How much more could Athena hate us? "You truly think you can keep him hidden from her?"
"I know I cannot."
"Then what is it you seek?"
She had drawn her cloak around herself like a bird wrapped in its wings. "When I was young, I overheard our palace surgeon talking. He said that the medicines he sold were only for show. Most hurts heal by themselves, he said, if you give them enough time. It was the sort of secret I loved to discover, for it made me feel cynical and wise. I took it for a philosophy. I have always been good at waiting, you see. I outlasted the war and the suitors. I outlasted Odysseus's travels. I told myself that if I were patient enough, I could outlast his restlessness, and Athena too. Surely, I thought, there must be some other mortal in the world for her to love. But it seemed there was not. And while I sat, Telemachus bore his father's rage year after year. He suffered while I turned my eyes away.
I remembered what Odysseus had said about her once, that she never went astray, never made an error. I had been jealous then. Now I thought, what a burden, what an ugly weight upon your back. But this world does have true medicines. You are proof of that. You walked into the depths for your son. You defied the gods. I think of all the years of my life I wasted on that little man's boast. I have paid for it. That is only justice, but I have made Telemachus pay as well. He is a good son. He has always been. I seek a little time before I lose him, before we are thrust into the tide again. Will you grant it, Circe of Aeaea?
She did not use those grey eyes on me. If she had, I would have refused her. She waited only. It was true that it looked well on her. She seemed to fit into the air like a jewel in its crown.
It is winter, I said.
No ships sail now. Aeaea will bear you a little longer.
Chapter 23. Our sons had returned from their work, windswept but dry. The thunder and rain had stayed out at sea. While the others ate their meal, I went up to the highest peak and felt the spell above me. From bay to bay it reached, from yellow sands to rugged stones. I felt it in my blood as well, that iron weight I had borne so long. Athena tested it, surely. She prowled the edges, looking for a crack. But it would hold. When I returned, Penelope was at the loom again. She looked over her shoulder.
It seems we have a break in the weather. The seas should be calm enough now. Telegonus, would you learn to swim?
Of all the things I had expected after our conversation, that was not one. But I had no time to think of objecting. Telegonus nearly knocked over his cup in eagerness. As they left through the garden, I heard him explaining my plants. Since when did he know what hornbeam was, or hemlock? But he pointed to them both and named their properties. Telemachus had come up silent beside me.
They look like mother and son, he said.
It had been my thought exactly, but I felt a spurt of anger to hear him voice it. I went out to the garden without answering. I knelt in my beds and yanked up weeds. He surprised me by following.
I do not mind helping your son, but let us be honest. That sty you told us to fix has not been used in years. Will you give me something to do that is actually useful?
I sat back on my heels, regarding him. Royalty does not usually beg for jaws.
My subjects seem to have left me with some spare time. Your island is very beautiful, but I will go mad if I have to keep idle on it day after day.
What can you do, then?
The usual. Fish and shoot. Tend the goats you do not have, carve and build. I could fix your son's boat.
Is something wrong with it?
The rudder is slow and unreliable. The sail too short and the mast too long. It wallows like a cow in any surge.
It did not look so bad to me.
I do not mean it was not impressive for a first try. Just that I am shocked we did not sink on the way over.
It is charmed against sinking, I said. How did you become such a shipwright?
I am from Ithaca, he said simply.
And is there anything else I should know about? His face was serious, as if giving a diagnosis.
The sheep are matted enough to ruin the spring shearing. Three tables in your hall are unbalanced, and the garden path flagstones wobble. There are at least two birds' nests in your eaves.
I was half amused, half offended.
Is that all? I have not made a complete survey.
In the morning, you may fix the boat with Telegonus. As for now, we will start with the sheep.
He was right. They were matted, and after the wet winter, muddied past their shoulders.
I brought out the brush and a large bowl filled with one of my drafts. He examined it.
What does it do?
It cleans the mud without stripping the fleece. He knew his business and went to it efficiently. My sheep were tame, but he had his own tricks of coaxing and soothing. His hand on their backs guided them effortlessly here and there. I said, "You have done this before."
Of course. This wash is excellent. What is it?
Thistle, artemisia, celery, sulfur, magic.
Ah.
I had the trimming knife by then and set to cutting out burrs.
He asked about the animal's pedigree and my breeding methods. He wanted to know if it was a spell that kept them tame or my influence. When his hands were occupied, he lost his awkward stiffness. Soon enough, he was telling me stories of his follies at goat herding, and I was laughing. I did not notice the sun drop into the sea, and I startled when Penelope and Telegonus appeared beside us. I could feel Penelope's gaze on us as we rose and wiped the mud from our hands. "Come," I said. "You must be hungry." That night, Penelope left dinner early again. I wondered if she meant to make a point, but her weariness seemed real enough. She was still grieving, I reminded myself. We all were. But the swimming had done my son good, or maybe it was Penelope's attention. He was red-cheeked from wind and wanted to talk, not about his father, which was still too much a wound, but his old first love. Heroic stories. There had apparently been a bard on Ithaca who was skilled at such tales, and he wanted to hear from Telemachus the versions that he told. Telemachus began. Bellerophon and Perseus, Tantalus, Atalanta. He had taken the wooden chair again, and I the silver. Telegonus leaned against a wolf on the floor. Looking between them, I felt a strange, almost drunken sense of unreality. Had it really only been 2 days since they had come? It felt much longer. I was not used to so much company, so many conversations. My son begged for another story and another, and Telemachus obliged. His hair was windblown from our work outside, and the firelight lay along his cheek. So much of him looked older than he was, but there was a sweetly made curve there that might almost be called boyish. He was no storyteller, as he had said, but that made it more enjoyable somehow, watching his serious face as he described flying horses and golden apples. The room was warm and the vintage good. My skin had begun to feel soft as wax. I leaned forward. "Tell me, did that bard ever speak of Pasiphae, Queen of Crete?" "The mother of the Minotaur," Telemachus said. "Of course. She is always in the tale of Theseus."
"Did anyone say what happened to her when Minos died? She is immortal. Does she still rule there?"
Telemachus was frowning. It was not displeasure, but the same face he had made when he examined my sheep wash. I saw him following the threads of genealogies through their tangle. "A daughter of the sun, Pasiphae was said to be," I saw when he understood.
"No," he said. "Her and Minos's line no longer rules. A man named Leucos is king, who usurped from Idomeneus, who was her grandchild. In the story I heard, she went back to the halls of the gods after Minos died and lives in honor there."
"Whose halls?"
"The bard did not say."
A giddy recklessness had seized me.
"Oceanus's, most likely. Our grandfather, she will be terrorizing the nymphs as she used to. I was there when the Minotaur was born. I helped cage it."
Telegonus gaped.
"You are related to Queen Pasiphae, and you saw the Minotaur. Why did you not mention this?"
"You did not ask me."
"Mother, you must tell me everything. Did you meet Minos and Daedalus?"
"How do you think I came by his loom?"
"I don't know. I thought it was, you know..."
He waved his hand in the air. Telemachus was watching me. "No," I said. "I knew the man."
"What else have you kept from me?" Telegonus demanded. "The Minotaur and Trigon and how many others? The Chimera? The Nemean Lion? Cerberus and Scylla?"
I had been smiling at his wide-eyed outrage and did not see the blow coming. Where had my son heard her name? Hermes? Ithaca? It did not matter. A cold spear point was twisting in my gut. What had I been thinking? My past was not some game, some adventure table. It was the ugly wreck that storms left rotten on the shore. It was as bad as Odysseus's. "I have said all I will say. Do not ask me again." I stood and walked away from their startled faces. In my room I lay on my bed. There were no wolves or lions. They had stayed with my son. Over us somewhere was Athena, watching with her flashing eyes, waiting with her spear to dart at my weakness. I spoke into the shadows. "Keep waiting." And though I was sure I would not sleep, I did. I woke clear-headed, determined. I had been tired the night before and drunk more than I was used to, but now I was firm again. I laid out breakfast. When Telegonus came, I saw him eyeing me, waiting for another outburst. But I was pleasant. He should not be so surprised, I thought. I could be pleasant.
Telemachus kept his own counsel, but when the meal was finished, he took his brother out to begin fixing the ship. May I use your loom again?
Penelope wore a different dress. This one was finer. It had been bleached to a pale cream. It showed off well the dark tones of her skin. You may. I thought of going to the kitchen, but I often cut herbs at the long table near the hearth, and I did not see why I should relegate myself. I brought out the knives and bowls and all the rest. The spells that protected Telegonus did not need to be renewed for another half a moon, so what I did was only for my own pleasure, drying and grinding, distilling tinctures for later use. I thought we would not speak. In our place, Odysseus might have gone on concealing and jockeying just for the pleasure of it. But after so long, I think we had both come to appreciate the value of open conversation. The light slanted through the window, pooling on our bare feet. I asked her about Helen, and she told me stories of when they were children together, swimming in Sparta's rivers and playing at her uncle Tyndareus's court. We talked of weaving and the best breeds of sheep. I thanked her for offering to teach Telegonus how to swim. She was glad to do it, she said. He reminded her of her cousin Castor, with his eagerness and good humour, his way of easing those around him. Odysseus drew the well to him, she said. Telegonus runs after, shaping as he goes, like a river carving a channel. It pleased me more than I could say to hear her praise him. You should have known him as a baby. There was never such a wild creature, though if I am honest, I was the wilder of the two of us. Motherhood seemed easy to me before I had a child. Helen's baby was like that, she said. Hermione. She screamed for half a decade, but grew up sweet as anything. I worried that Telemachus did not scream enough, that he was well-behaved too soon. I was always curious how a second child might have been different, but by the time Odysseus came home, it seemed that was finished for me. Her voice was matter-of-fact. Loyal, songs called her later. Faithful and true and prudent. Such passive, pale words for what she was. She could have taken another husband, born another child while Odysseus was gone. Her life would have been easier for it. But she had loved him fiercely and would accept no other. I took down a bunch of yarrow that had been hanging from a roof beam. What is that used for? Healing salves. Yarrow stops bleeding. May I watch? I have never seen witchcraft. It pleased me as much as her praise of Telegonus. I made room at the table. She was a flattering audience, asking careful questions as I named each ingredient and explained its purpose. She wanted to see the herbs I had used to turn men into pigs. I dropped the dried leaves into her hand. I'm not about to turn myself into a sow, am I? You would have to ingest it and speak the words of power. Only those plants fallen from divine blood need no spell to summon their magic. And, I think, you would have to be a witch.
A goddess.
No, I said. My niece was mortal, and she cast spells as strong as mine.
Your niece, she said. You do not mean Medea.
It was strange to hear the name aloud after so long. You know her?
I know what is sung by bards and played in courtyards for kings.
I would hear it, I said. The trees outside clattered in the wind as she talked. Medea had indeed escaped Aetes. She had travelled on to Iolcos with Jason and borne him two sons. But he recoiled from her sorceries, and his people despised her. In time he sought a new marriage with a sweet, well-loved princess from home. Medea praised his wisdom and sent the bride gifts. A crown and a cloak that she had made herself. When the girl put them on, she was burnt alive. Then Medea dragged her children to an altar and, swearing that Jason would never have them, slit their throats. She was last seen summoning a chariot drawn by dragons to take her back to Colchis. The bards had been at the story, no doubt, but I could still see Medea's bright, piercing face. I believed that she would rather set the world on fire than lose. I warned her once that grief would come of her marriage. There is no pleasure in hearing I was right.
There seldom is.
Penelope's voice was soft. She was thinking of those slaughtered children, perhaps. I was thinking of them too. and the dragon chariot that was of course my brother's. It seemed incredible that she would go back to him after all that had passed between them. Yet it also made a sort of sense to me. Aeetes wanted an heir, and there was none more like him than Medea. She had grown up trained around his cruelty, and in the end it seemed she had not learned how to hold another shape. I poured honey onto the yarrow, added beeswax to bind the salve. The air was musky sweet and sharp with herbs. Penelope said, "What makes a witch, then, if it is not divinity?" "I do not know for certain," I said. "I once thought it was passed through blood, but Telegonus has no spells in him. I have come to believe it is mostly will." She nodded. I did not have to explain. We knew what will was. That afternoon, Penelope and Telegonus went off again to the bay. I had assumed after my abruptness last night that Telemachus would keep his distance, but he found me at my herbs.
"I thought I would work on the tables."
I watched him while I ground the hellebore leaves. He had a measuring string and a cup he had marked and filled to the line with water. "What are you doing?"
"Testing if the floor is level. Your problem is actually the legs. They are slightly different sizes. It will be easy to adjust."
I watched him using the rasp, checking and rechecking the legs with his length of string. I asked him how he had broken his nose.
"Swimming with my eyes closed," he said. "I learned my lesson there."
When he was finished, he went out to do the flagstones. I followed, weeding, though the garden scarcely needed it. We discussed bees, how I always wished there were more on the island. He asked if I could tame them like the other creatures. "No," I said. "I use smoke like everyone else."
"I saw a hive that looks over full," he said.
"I can split it in the spring if you like." I said I would, and watched him scrape away the uneven soil. "The roof drains there," I said. "Those flagstones will only wobble again after the next rain."
"That is how things go. You fix them and they go awry, and then you fix them again."
"You have a patient temper."
"My father called it dullness. Shearing, cleaning out the hearths, pitting olives. He wanted to know how to do such things for curiosity's sake, but he did not want to actually have to do them."
It was true. Odysseus's favorite task was the sort that only had to be performed once. Raiding a town, defeating a monster, finding a way inside an impenetrable city. "Perhaps you get it from your mother." He did not look up, but I saw him tense.
"How is she? I know you speak to her."
"She misses you."
"She knows where I am?"
The anger stood out plain and clean on his face. There was a sort of innocence to him, I thought. I do not mean this as the poets mean it, a virtue to be broken by the story's end or else upheld at greatest cost. Nor do I mean that he was foolish or guileless. I mean that he was made only of himself, without the dregs that clog the rest of us. He thought and felt and acted, and all these things made a straight line. No wonder his father had been so baffled by him. He would have been always looking for the hidden meaning, the knife in the dark. But Telemachus carried his blade in the open. They were strange days. Athena hung over our heads like an axe, yet so she had hung for 16 years. I would hardly faint at it now. Every morning Telegonus took his brother out upon the island. Penelope spun or wove while I shaped my herbs. I had drawn my son aside by then and told him some of what I had learned of Odysseus's worsening temper on Ithaca, his suspicions and angers, and day by day I saw the knowledge work upon him. He still grieved, but the guilt began to ease, and the brightness came back to his face. Penelope and Telemachus's presence helped still more. He basked in their attention like my lions in a patch of sun. It panged me to realize how much he had wanted family all these years. Penelope and Telemachus still did not speak to each other. Hour after hour, meal after meal, the air between them was brittle. It seemed absurd to me that they did not just confess their faults and sorrows and be done, but they were like eggs, each afraid to crack the other. In the afternoons, Telemachus always seemed to find some task that brought him near, and we would talk until the sun touched the sea. When I went inside to set out the plates for dinner, he followed.
If there was work enough for two, he helped. If there was not, he sat at the hearth carving small pieces of wood. A bull, a bird, a whale breaching the waves. His hands had a precise, careful economy that I admired. He was no witch, but he had the temperament for it. I told him that the floor would clean itself, but he always swept the sawdust and wood curls after. It was strange to have such constant company. Telegonus and I had mostly kept out of each other's way, and my nymphs had been more like shadows flitting at the corner of my eye. Usually even that much presence wore on me, nagging at my attention until I had to leave and walk the island alone. But there was a contained quality to Telemachus, a quiet assurance that made him companionable without being intrusive. The creature he most reminded me of, I realized, was my lion. They had the same upright dignity, the same steady gaze with deep-set humor, even the same earthbound grace, which pursued their own ends while I pursued mine. "What's so funny?" he asked me. I shook my head. It was perhaps the sixth day since they had come. He was making an olive tree, shaping the twisting trunk, picking out each knot and hole with his knife's point. "Do you miss Ithaca?" I asked him. He considered. "I miss those I knew, and I am sorry not to see my goat's breed." He paused. "I think I would not have been a bad king." "Telemachus the Just," I said. He smiled. "That's what they call you if you're so boring they can't think of something better." "I think you would be a good king also," I said. "Perhaps you still can be. The memories of men are short. You could return in glory as the long-awaited heir, bringing prosperity with the rightness of your blood." "It sounds like a good story," he said. "But what would I do in those rooms that my father and the suitors filled up? Every step would be a memory I wished I did not have." "It must be difficult for you to be near Telegonus." His brow creased. "Why would it be?" "Because he looks so much like your father." He laughed. "What are you talking about? Telegonus is stamped from you. I do not just mean your face. It is your gestures, your walk, your way of speaking, even your voice." "You make it sound like a curse," I said. "It is no curse," he said. Our eyes met across the air. Far away, my hands were peeling pomegranates for dinner. Methodically, I scored the rind, revealed the white lattice. Within, the red juice pips glowed through their waxy cells. My mouth stung a little with thirst. I had been watching myself with him. It was a novelty to me, noticing the expressions shaping themselves on my face, the movement of my words across my tongue. So much of my life had been spent plunged up to the elbows, tacking now here, now there, spattered and impulsive. This new feeling crept over me like a sort of distant sleepiness, almost a languor. This was not the first speaking look that he had given me. But what did it matter? My son was his brother. His father had been in my bed. He was owed to Athena. I knew it, even if he did not. Outside, the seasons had turned. The sky opened its hands, and the earth swelled to meet it. The light poured thickly down, coating us in gold. The sea lagged only a little behind. At breakfast, Telegonus clapped his brother on the back. "In another few days, we can take the boat out in the bay." I felt Penelope's glance. How far does the spell extend? I did not know. Somewhere beyond the breakers, but I could not name the exact wave. I said, "Don't forget, Telegonus, there's always one last bad storm. Wait till then." As if in answer, a knock sounded on the door. In the silence that followed, Telegonus whispered, "The wolves did not howl." "No." I did not look at Penelope in warning. If she did not guess, she was a fool. I drew my divinity up, cold and bracing around me, and went to open the door. Those same black eyes, that same perfect and handsome face. I heard my son gasp, felt the frozen stillness behind me. "Daughter of Helios, may I come in?" "No." He lifted an eyebrow. "I have a message that concerns one of your guests." I felt a grating fear along my ribs, but I kept my voice flat. They can hear you where you stand.
Very well.
His skin glowed. His drawling, smirking manner vanished. This was the divine messenger of the gods, potent and inevitable.
Telemachus, Prince of Ithaca, I come on behalf of the great goddess Athena, who would speak with you. She requires that the witch Circe lower the spell that bars her from the isle.
Requires, I said. That's an interesting word for one who tried to kill my son.
Who is to say she does not plan to try again?
She's not interested in your son in the least.
He dropped his glory. His voice was casual once more.
If you will be a fool about it, these are her words, of course. She offers an oath of protection for him. It is Telemachus alone she wants. It is time for him to take his inheritance.
He looked past me to the table.
Do you hear, Prince?
Telemachus's eyes were lowered.
I hear. I am humbled by messenger and message both. But I am a guest on this island. I must await my hostess's word.
Hermes cocked his head a little, his eyes intent.
Well, hostess?
I felt Penelope at my back, risen like an autumn moon. She had asked for time to mend things with Telemachus, and she had not done it yet. I could imagine her bitter thoughts.
I will do it, I said. But it will take some effort to unwind the spell's working.
She may expect to come in 3 days.
You want me to tell the daughter of Zeus she has to wait 3 days?
They have been here half a month. If she was in a hurry, she should have sent you earlier. And you may tell her those are my words. Amusement flashed in his eyes. I had fed off that look once, when I had been starving and thought such crumbs a feast.
Be sure I will.
We breathed into the empty space he left behind. Penelope met my eye.
Thank you, she said.
Then she turned to Telemachus. Son, it was the first time I had heard her speak to him directly.
I have made you wait too long. Will you walk with me?
Chapter 24. We watched them go down the path to the shore. Telemachus looked half stunned, but that was only natural. He had learned he was Athena's chosen, and would make peace with his mother in the same moment. I had wanted to say something to him before he left, but no words had come. Telegonus bumped at my elbow.
What did Hermes mean? Telemachus's inheritance.
I shook my head. Just that morning I had seen the first green buds of spring. Athena had timed it well. She came as soon as she could make Telemachus sail.
I am surprised the spell takes 3 days to undo. Can't you use that, what's it called? Moly.
I turned to him. You know my spells are governed by my will. If I let go, they will fall in a second. So no, it does not take 3 days. He frowned.
You lied to Hermes. Won't Athena be angry when she finds out?
His innocence could still frighten me. I do not plan to tell her. Telegonus, these are gods. You must keep your tricks close or you will lose everything.
You did it so they would have time to talk, he said.
Penelope and Telemachus.
Young he was, but not a fool. Something like that. He tapped his finger on the shutters. The lions did not stir. They knew the noise of his restlessness well.
Will we see them again, if they leave?
I think you will, I said. If he heard the change I made, he said nothing. I could feel my chest heaving a little. It had been so long since I had spoken to Hermes. I'd forgotten the effort it took to face down that shrewd, all-seeing gaze. He said,
Do you think Athena will try to kill me?
She must swear an oath before she comes. She will be bound by it. But I will have a spear, in case. I made my hands work through their chores, plates and washing and weeding. When it began to grow dark, I packed a basket of food and sent Telegonus to find Penelope and Telemachus.
Don't linger, I said. They should be alone.
He reddened.
I am not an idiot child.
I drew in a breath.
I know you are not.
I paced while he was gone. I could not explain the stinging tension I felt. I had known he would be leaving. I had known all along. Penelope returned when the moon rose.
I am grateful to you, she said. Life is not so simple as a loom.
What you weave, you cannot unravel with a tug. But I think I have made a start. Is it wrong of me to confess that I enjoyed watching you set Hermes back? I have a confession of my own. I am not sorry to let Athena twist for 3 days. She smiled. Thank you, again.
Telegonus sat at the hearth, fletching arrows. He had scarcely managed a handful. He was as restless as I was, scuffing at the stones, staring out of the window at the empty garden path as if Hermes might appear again. I cleaned the tables that did not need cleaning. I set my pots of herbs, now here, now there. Penelope's black mourning cloak hung from the loom, nearly finished. I could have sat and worked a while, but the change of hands would show in the cloth. I'm going out, I told Telegonus, and before he could speak, I left. My feet carried me to a small hollow I knew among the oaks and olives. The branches made good shade, and the grass grew soft. You could listen to the night birds overhead. He was sitting on a fallen tree, outlined against the dark.
Do I disturb you?
No, he said. I sat beside him. Beneath my feet, the grass was cool and faintly damp. The owls cried in the distance, still hungry from winter's scarcity. My mother told me what you did for us, both now and before. Thank you. I'm glad if it helped. He nodded faintly. She has been 3 leagues ahead, as always. Over us, the branches stirred, carving the moon into slivers. Are you ready to face the grey-eyed goddess?
Is anyone?
You have seen her before, at least, when she stopped the war between your father and the suitor's kin.
I have seen her many times, he said. She used to come to me when I was a child. Never in her own form. I would notice a quality to certain people around me. You know, the stranger with overly detailed advice. The old family friend whose eyes shine in the dark. The air would smell like buttery olives and iron. I would speak her name, and the sky would glow bright as polished silver. The dull things of my life, the hangnail on my thumb, the suitor's taunts, would fade. She made me feel like one of the heroes from Zong's, ready to tame fire-breathing bulls and sow dragon's teeth. An owl circled on its silent wings. In the quiet, the yearning in his voice rang like a bell. After my father returned, I never saw her again. For a long time I waited. I killed ewes in her name. I scrutinized everyone who passed. Did that goatherd linger strangely? Was not that sailor too interested in my thoughts? He made a sound in the dark, a half laugh. You can imagine people didn't love me for it, always staring at them, then turning away in disappointment.
Do you know what she intends for you?
Who can say with a god?
Felt it like a rebuke, that old, uncrossable gulf between mortal and divinity. You will have power, certainly, and wealth. You will likely have your chance to be Telemachus the Just. His eyes rested on the shadows of the forest. He had scarcely glanced at me since I came. Whatever had been between us was dispersed like smoke on the wind. His mind was with Athena, pointed at his future. I had known it would be so, but it surprised me how much it ached to see it happen so quickly. I spoke briskly. You should take the boat, of course. It's charmed against sea disaster, as you know. With her help, you shouldn't need that. But it will let you leave as soon as you are ready. Telegonus will not mind. He was quiet so long, I thought he had not heard. But at last he said, That is a kind offer. Thank you. Then you will have your island back. I heard the crackles in the brush. I heard the sea distant on the shore, the sound of our breaths vanishing into its ceaseless wash. Yes, I said. I will. In the days that followed, I passed him as if he were a table in my hall. Penelope eyed me, but I did not speak to her either. The two of them were often together now, mending what had been broken. I did not care to see it. I took Telegonus down to the sea to show me his swimming, his shoulders hard with muscle cut unerring through the sea. He looked older than 16, a man grown. Children of gods always came to their strength faster than mortals. He would miss them when they were gone, I knew. But I would find something else for him. I would help him forget. I would say some people are like constellations that only touch the earth for a season. I set out their evening meals, then took my cloak and walked into the darkness. I sought the highest peaks, the breaks where mortals could not follow me. Even as I did it, I laughed at myself. Which of them do you think is going to chase after you? My mind turned through all those stories I had kept from Odysseus. Aietes and Scylla and the rest. I had not wanted my history to be only an amusement, grist for his relentless intelligence. But who else would have tolerated it, with all its ugliness and errors? I had missed my chance to speak, and now it was too late. I went to bed. I dreamed till dawn of the spear tipped with Trigon's tail. The morning of the third day, Penelope touched me on the sleeve. She had finished the black cloak. It made her face look thinner, her skin dulled. She said, "I know I ask much, but will you be there when we speak to her?"
"I will. And Telegonus, too. I want it finished and clear. I am tired of games."
All my words felt like that, hard in my teeth. I strode up to the peak. The rocks there were darkened from 16 years of my drafts. I reached down, rubbed my finger against the pitted stains. So many times I had come here, so many hours spent. I closed my eyes and felt the spell above me, fragile as glass. I let it fall. There was the faintest ping, like the snap of an overdrawn bowstring. I waited for the old weight to drop from my shoulders, but instead a grey fatigue rolled through me. I put out my hand for balance and found only air. I staggered, knees wavering, but there was no time for such weakness. We were exposed. Athena was coming, arrowing down upon my island like an eagle in her dive. I made myself start down the mountain. My feet caught on every root, the rocks turned my ankles. My breath came thin and shallow. I opened the door. Three faces startled up to mine. Telegonus rose. "Mother?" I pushed past him. My sky lay open and each moment was a danger. The spear, that is what I needed. I seized its crooked shaft from the corner where I kept it and breathed the sweet poison scent. My mind seemed to clear a little. Even Athena would not risk this. I carried it into the hall and set myself at the hearth. Uncertainly, they followed. There was no time for a warning. Her lightning bolt limbs struck the room and the air turned silver. Her breastplate glowed as if it were still half molten. The crest of her helmet bristled over us. Her eyes fixed on me. Her voice was dark as ore. "I told you that you would be sorry if he lived."
"You were wrong," I said.
"You have always been insolent, Titan." Sharply, as if to wound me with her precision, she turned her gaze to Telemachus. He was kneeling, Penelope beside him.
"Son of Odysseus," she said.
Her voice changed, gilding itself.
"Zeus has foretold that a new empire will rise in the west. Aeneas is fled there with his remnant Trojans, and I would have Greeks to balance and hold them at bay. The land is fertile and rich, thick with beasts of field and forest, overhung with fruits of every kind. You will found a prosperous city there. You will build stout walls and set down laws to hold back the tide of savagery. You will seed a great people who will rule in ages to come. I have gathered good men from across our lands and set them on a ship. They arrive this day to bear you to your future."
The room burned with the aureate sparks of her vision. Telemachus burned too. His shoulders seemed broader, his limbs swollen with strength. Even his voice had deepened.
"Goddess," he said, "grey-eyed and wise, I am honored among mortals. No man can deserve such grace."
She smiled like a temple snake over its bowl of cream.
"The ship will come for you at dusk. Be ready."
It was his cue to stand, to show off that glory she had bestowed on him, lift it like a glittering standard. But he knelt, unmoving.
"I fear I am not worthy of your gifts."
I frowned. Why was he groveling so much? It was not wise. He should thank her and be done before she found some reason for offense. Her voice had a tinge of impatience.
"I know your weaknesses," she said.
They will not matter when I am there to steady your spear arm. I guided you once to victory against the suitors. I will guide you again.
You have watched over me, he said. I thank you for it, yet I cannot accept.